think one way to separate it out is to look at what you're finding and what their symptoms are, and then go down a real stepwise differential diagnosis. So if they're hypotensive and you're not sure why, they don't have obvious urticaria or something like that, then you can think about what other causes of hypotension. So you would think about the other causes of shock, you know, septic shock, cardiogenic shock, perhaps dysrhythmia, perhaps occult trauma. So those things you need to keep in mind. Vasovagal reactions would also be included in that. The other category you would think about would be respiratory symptoms. If their symptoms are primarily respiratory, is it related directly to a diagnosis of asthma or COPD? If they had respiratory in conjunction possibly with syncope, then you might want to think about pulmonary embolism. You may want to think about airway foreign bodies. So of course, in that category, there's other things to think about as well. And oftentimes people come in and they had something to eat, and so they have postprandial symptoms. In those cases, airway foreign body would be, if their primary symptom is stridor, difficulty breathing postprandial, you may think about airway foreign body, especially in young children. But there's other things to think about, too, that we see in the ER that somewhat mimic anaphylaxis would be scomboid, which is associated with eating decaying fish, and then they convert histidine into histamine, causes a similar reaction. And then, of course, if patients have flushing, there's other things to think about. That could be from alcohol. It could be from menopause. It could be from medications like niacin, maybe kind of a red man syndrome from vancomycin. Of course, in that case, most often they're going to be in the emergency department or in the hospital receiving vancomycin. So the differential really is broad, and it's something you need to go through quickly to come to a definitive diagnosis.
So once you have made your diagnosis, how is anaphylaxis treated?
Well, in the acute setting, you know, we try and simplify things in the emergency department and look at the ABCs. So airway, breathing, circulation, this is going to be very rapid. In the case of anaphylaxis, you know, you really got to think also E, and that is epinephrine. That is the number one pharmacologic treatment for anaphylaxis. It's underutilized. It's often used incorrectly. And so it's something that we really need to review, and we need to pound home to make sure physicians understand when to use it, what dose to use, and what route to administer it. So in the case of a diagnosis of anaphylaxis, you want to start with an epinephrine injection that's going to be intramuscular in the lateral thigh and the vastus lateralis muscle. And one of the confusing things is the dilutions of epinephrine. The first medication you're going to use in the case of anaphylaxis is epinephrine 1 to 1,000, which is 1 milligram per milliliter. In adults, you're going to use a dose of 0.3 milligrams. Again, that's an IM injection in the lateral thigh, anterolateral thigh. In children, it's going to be 0.01 milligrams per kilogram with a maximum dose of 0.3 milligrams. And then that dose can be repeated in maybe 5 to 15 minute intervals until you have resolution of symptoms, specifically of upper airway edema or hypotension. I think it's important to note that the intramuscular route of administration is important. Oftentimes, we were trained in medical school, I think many physicians were, that it's 0.3 milligrams of epi sub-Q. But really, intramuscular gets the quickest peak epinephrine concentration, and in a diagnosis where minutes do matter, you want to reach that peak concentration quickly. If you have treated with IM epinephrine and it's not effective, then you need to move on to using IV epinephrine. For IV dosing, you're going to start a continuous infusion of 1 to 10,000 dilution of epinephrine. In adults, you want to start an infusion at 2 micrograms per minute up to 10 micrograms per minute with an endpoint of really improving that blood pressure or improving signs and symptoms of upper airway edema. In children, you want to use a dose of 0.1 to up to 1.0 micrograms per kilo per minute. So it's an important distinction between adults, micrograms per minute. In kids, of course, it's weight-based, micrograms per kilo per minute.
And I think this is important for all physicians, not just the emergency medicine physician, but I've been called upon to help somebody in the airplane who had a shellfish allergy. Physicians really need to know how to prescribe this medication and when to use it.
Some studies have shown that physicians can be reluctant to use epinephrine in an acute setting. Why is that?
I believe the fear in the acute setting and the reluctance really comes in adults that may have coronary artery disease or cardiac disease. And the concern is that the epinephrine itself may cause an MI. And while the risk is theoretically there, the reality is that anaphylaxis may also unmask not only a myocardial infarction, but dysrhythmias. So anaphylaxis untreated can cause a variety of things. And certainly a myocardial infarction and even death is something that can happen. So there's no true absolute contraindication to the use of epinephrine when there's a life-threatening situation. And that's a very important take-home message that really needs to be put across clearly.
I think the viewpoint sometimes amongst emergency department physicians is, you know, epinephrine is the last resort. You know, you think, oh, it was so bad, I had to give epinephrine. I don't think that's the way we should look at it. We should look at it as in, we have an extremely effective therapy that we need to give early. So when they meet these criteria for anaphylaxis, we need to get out the epinephrine and we need to use it. And I don't think we're doing a good enough job of that.
Now, are there other ways to treat anaphylaxis, and how effective are those other ways?
Well, there certainly are adjunctive therapies. As we just mentioned, epinephrine is the primary therapy for anaphylaxis. The secondary therapies would be as follows. You know, you want to make sure you have good IV access. In the first few minutes of anaphylaxis, you can lose up to 35% of your intravascular volume, which gets shifted to the extravascular space. So you want to have 2 large bore IVs. In adults, you want to have 1 to 2 liters of normal saline run in the first 5, 10, 15 minutes. In children, you're going to use boluses of normal saline, 20 milliliters per kilogram, which is the common bolus dosage of normal saline for other conditions as well. Other adjunctive therapies would be oxygen. You really want to treat to the patient's comfort. It is also well to continuous pulse oximetry, keep the pulse oximetry certainly above 92% with oxygen. So you could start them on 6 to 8 liters via face mask and titrate either way to make sure that you reach those parameters. As far as other medications, you're talking about predominantly antihistamines. And I think if you ask anyone, a physician or otherwise, you know, they're going to run for an antihistamine if they think they're having an allergic reaction or anaphylaxis. There's no randomized trials. There's really no proven benefit to the use of an antihistamine in anaphylaxis. Generally, we would use an H1 antihistamine such as diphenhydramine. And the reason you use that is to decrease the patient's symptoms of urticaria, of itching. It really just decreases the skin symptoms. It has no effect whatsoever on hypotension. It has no effect whatsoever on upper airway edema. So we need to keep that in mind. It is an adjunctive therapy after you have given epinephrine so that the patient will be more comfortable with their hives, with their itching. So we would use diphenhydramine in an IV dose of 25 to 50 milligrams for adults, and children, 1 to 2 milligrams per kilogram IV. There's also evidence that if you add an H2 antihistamine to the diphenhydramine, something like ranitidine or famotidine, that can have a quicker effect, again, on the skin manifestations, maybe on the patient's comfort level, but it will not affect the hypotension or the upper airway edema. So generally, in the emergency department setting, we would give diphenhydramine, and then we would give ranitidine or famotidine, both as well by IV. You also see people reaching for their asthma inhalers, for their albuterol, their beta-2 agonists. In patients who have bronchospasm as a manifestation of anaphylaxis, it may be useful as an adjunct. Again, the beta-2 agonist is going to act on the bronchospasm. It is not going to act on the stridor, on the upper airway edema, which really often is one of the life-threatening conditions. You can also have mucus plugging and bronchial obstruction, which could cause could be life-threatening, but, you know, albuterol is a secondary medication for those symptoms. And then we're going to talk a little bit about glucocorticoids or steroids, because, again, everyone thinks you're having an allergic reaction, you have a rash, you need a steroid. The reason that we use glucocorticoids is the theoretical prevention of a biphasic reaction. The effects are not for a number of hours, and we don't even know if it has an effect. In general, we would use it as an adjunctive therapy as well. We would use methylprednisolone in adults, 125 milligrams IV. In children, 1 to 2 milligrams per kilogram IV. Oral prednisone certainly could be substituted as well because again, the effects are not immediate. So epinephrine is the primary treatment that we need to worry about. And all these other things are really adjunctive therapies.
As an allergist on the outpatient setting, when I talk about anaphylaxis and the possibility that it will occur, I really focus on epinephrine. I don't even mention the antihistamines. The comfort level, as Dr. Parad had said, people will give it to their children, they'll take it themselves because it will make them feel better initially. The reality is it won't prevent that life-threatening reaction. And more importantly, it may mask some of the earlier signs, which may be on the skin or on the mucosal level. So if we focus on epinephrine and we know that that is what will actually eliminate the anaphylactic reaction, that is the best case scenario for the patient.
After the initial treatment, what's the role of observation?
Observation is interesting, and unfortunately, there's not a true consensus. Many physicians who are in the acute setting may give the epinephrine and then monitor for 4 to 6 hours. Other experts may actually recommend up to 8 to 12 hours. So it all depends on each patient, and it should be an individualized plan of care. So if someone comes in and it's moderate to severe anaphylaxis, they needed more than one dose of epi, they were not given the epinephrine early, or they're not responding to it, all of those patients, including patients that may have had a biphasic reaction, those patients really are at higher risk, and those should be observed longer and even admitted to the hospital.
I think the important thing about the biphasic reaction is, you know, that's why you're admitting them, because ideally, unless they have this protracted anaphylaxis, which is fairly rare, where they continue to have symptoms despite all the appropriate treatments. Usually in the emergency department setting, we can improve their symptoms, but if it's moderate or severe, they need to be admitted. If they got better quickly with epi and, you know, it was on the spectrum of anaphylaxis, maybe not quite as severe, I think monitoring, you know, like you said, 4 to 6 hours at least, maybe longer, is the best thing. And then you still need to educate the patients at that point if you do decide to discharge them of this possibility for biphasic reaction, that they could have symptoms in the emergency department that you could have treated. They may feel great, but when they go home, they need to know this could happen again. And at that point, when you need to educate them on epinephrine auto-injection and on treatment that they're going to do at home.
That is one of the reasons whenever I tell a patient, if you ever use epinephrine auto-injector ever, you truly need to go straight to an emergency room because of the risk. Number one, monitoring because you have received epinephrine, but number two, the risk that another reaction may occur.
So when should a physician prescribe an auto-injector, and how do you determine the exact dose of the epinephrine to give?
Well, I think any patient that's had an anaphylaxis episode, be it very mild. So, for instance, somebody that's stung by a bee and has hives and maybe some throat scratching, that's anaphylaxis. And that patient needs to have an auto-injector prescribed. Physicians need to educate the patient about the symptoms, when to use it, and how to use it.
Auto-injectors are notoriously under-prescribed. There's a great review, a 10-year review at the Mayo Clinic. They looked at 134 patients who were treated in the emergency department setting, and it left with a diagnosis of anaphylaxis. Only 37% of those patients were given a prescription or directly given an auto-injector. So I think it's a very important point that we need to keep in mind.
And certainly any patient that has what we call idiopathic anaphylaxis, where we don't know the cause, but they did have anaphylaxis symptoms, it's especially important in those patients because we may not be able to tell them to avoid anything in particular which may have been their trigger.
In terms of dosing in adults, it's 0.3 milligrams up to a 1 to 1,000 dilution. And the auto-injector comes in that particular dose.
So in children that are 15 kilograms up to 30 kilograms, we give them the dose of 0.15 milligrams, and children or adults that are 30 kilos and above, at this point in time, we only have those two particular doses, so that would be a 0.3 milligrams of auto-injector.
And Dr. Hernandez, how many auto-injectors would you generally recommend that we prescribe?
I always prescribe at least 2 auto-injectors, and it's for a variety of reasons. There are patients who will need that second dose, but then also they may need them at school, they may need them, they may live very far away, they like to hike. It's important for them to carry 2 epinephrine auto-injectors. So I always say a minimum of 2, and I will frequently give with several refills.
And if you look at studies in the emergency department, both of adults who were stung by insects, adults with food allergies, children with food allergies, you know, up to 35% require 2 doses of epinephrine. And so I think it certainly is important that when you discharge a patient, you give them 2 and you educate them that they may need to use it more than once.
It was stated that physicians can be reluctant to prescribe epinephrine in an acute setting, but what about the reluctance to prescribe an auto-injector?
Two reasons come to mind. First of all, we were all taught as medical students that epinephrine is a very powerful drug. It's a potent vasoconstrictor. It increases heart rate, blood pressure. It can predispose to cardiac arrhythmias. And so as an internist, I see patients that have multiple chronic diseases, such as coronary disease, heart failure, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, and we know that those patients can be at slight risk when they get an injection of epinephrine. However, if somebody has anaphylaxis, it's far more dangerous not to give the epinephrine because they may have a fatal reaction. And so that's one of the reasons why there may be a reluctance for physicians to prescribe an auto-injector, but they really shouldn't be. Secondly, internists often see patients who have scenarios that aren't classic for the diagnosis of anaphylaxis. There's some confusion as to what might be happening with the patient. So as an example, I saw a patient recently, a middle-aged nurse, who gave a history of a 6-month scenario where she starts getting flushed and has runny nose and a scratchy throat with exercise. Initially, she thought she might be allergic to something in the environment, so she started to exercise indoors. Same thing happened. After running, she would get red in the face, feel flushed, nose would be congested and run, scratchy throat. I wasn't quite sure whether this was mild anaphylaxis or something else, so I erred on the side of prescribing an auto-injector, and I made the referral to an allergist. So I think those are some of the reasons why physicians might be reluctant to use an auto-injector.
And as an allergist, when I speak to other physicians that are non-allergists about their reluctance, there have been a few things. One is I've never used an auto-injector, so I don't know how to teach it. So that's one reason. Number two, if I don't give the prescription, then I won't be responsible. The reality is that if someone comes to any of our settings and has anaphylaxis-like symptoms and they leave that setting without a prescription, we are responsible by definition. So yes, that the cardiovascular fear is obviously the benefits would outweigh the risk, but I think the most important take-home message here is we really need to be writing the prescription for the auto-injector, and the best case scenario would be to be able to have the time and educate the patient on proper use.